position. I don't quite know, and we didn't say how many between what we do today and next week when the department comes to deal in the detail with some of the operational issues, but we leave it in your wisdom. Let me just apologize. The deputy minister is abroad in Germany at the moment, and the DG, Mr. Netanyahu, is on a non-deal roadshow in the United States. Andrew Robertson is the acting DG. So, with those apologies, let me just also say that we've tried to keep the presentation short. And if you take away the cover page, that's the potential slides that we have before. I'm saying there is a high level strategic discussion that we want to have. That discussion needs to start with the way in which this entity that we call the finance family hangs together. It's a family that each component has its discrete responsibilities. The responsibilities of the National Treasury for macroeconomic and fiscal policy are well established, but then also issues of financial regulation, intergovernmental fiscal relations, and issues of tax policy, but increasingly now international responsibility. Which come out here. We need to see whether we can find time to talk about. Just a few weeks ago, there was the spring meeting of the World Bank and IMF. Certain issues arose there. There are very topical issues related to the World Bank at the moment, and this must be the only parliament in the world that is not called on its representatives there to discuss these issues to find out what the future of this institution is. That's one. Sunday this week, the African Development Bank will start its annual meetings and is hosted in a small African town called Shanghai in China. But after that, we have to go to Germany because the G8 internationalists need an agenda for hiding the dust, which is focused in Africa. It's important that comes in first place. Thereafter, the development ministers are meeting in Berlin to also prepare for hiding the dust. And then, later this year, or in the course of this year, we chair the G20. There already has been one seminar convened in Brasilia to look at the reform of the Bretton Woods institutions. There's another one next week convened, I think it's in New York now, to look at commodity prices and its impact on macroeconomics. And there's one in about July to be convened in Turkey that looks at the notion of fiscal space as part of the G20. And then in November we host the G20 financial ministers and central bank government just outside of Cape Town. Parliament needs to know. I'm hoping that somewhere in the schedule of this committee, we can be called to account for the things we say and do, and for the play tickets and everything else we get to understand the Parliament as well. Because Parliament needs to know, and I think it's necessary that we do that. So that's broadly what the Treasury does. We can come back to the key focal areas in a moment. The Revenue Service, I don't think we know what the core mandate is, so let me explain. You want it?
said there's a, clearly a number of interesting challenges that will come to our minds. But then, within this family, there are also other developments. One of them is the GDP of administration, which is a kind of standalone entity, but somehow Parliament needs to know about it. There is the Public Investment Corporation, which is a statutory standalone. It's chaired by the Deputy Minister of Finance. It's the largest fund manager at the moment. I don't want to talk about the school, but there's not a lot of money under management. I think the number is more than 700 billion. It's a lot of money. There's the DBSA. They have their own discussion, certainly in the annual report. And so. But, you know, something that appears to fall off the bottom of the page is a financial intelligence center. This is the family. We are responsible for all of these things. And, but, you know, today we will concentrate on the Treasury, on SARS, on Statutes and Financial Intelligence Center. Just a broad brushstrokes, allowing us to have some discussion of the direction here, and then later basis for the other discussion. What does the Treasury want to do now? What does it need to do? And the first of these items is this notion of, it's part of our G20 agenda as well, but the issue of fiscal space. If we want to sustain growth and development, we've got to create the space. And part of the space drives certain changes, and here we've been able to announce with this committee the changes to social security reform. It's one of the big positives that arises from fiscal space. But in the creation of the space and in its application, we need to be able to focus on how we can both accelerate and sustain growth. It's the fiscal space that is a sine qua non for at least. You don't have the money, you can't do it. You haven't made the right choices about how to spend the money. You can't actually advance in this kind of world. The second area is a big area change is social security and retirement reform. We announced this both as a new chapter in the budget review, we prepared a paper subsequently. We are in discussion with social partners on this, but it is proving itself to be an incredibly difficult area of work, partly because it is such a mammoth task, partly because it's set a certain type of deadline for legislative and other changes, but it's work in progress. In respect of the third word, financial governance, responsibility, and accountability, firstly, there are plans to set charter goals. And I think members of the committee would know that the Charter Council came, and it's probably a leak in this whole realm, but the Charter Council came entirely off its own back to talk about its performance after the first year to this committee, and that I think is a very good thing. We remain engaged. There are certain targets that must be met. There is, for instance, the public commitment made by the Charter Council on 42 billion rand for mortgage lending in that area between 3,500 and 7,000 rand. It needs to be found. It needs to be supported. It needs to be urged along so that we can deal with that very important gap in the market. But there are also HR issues, and as Mr. Bonner would have reported here, we're not quite happy with the linkages with small business because our commitment rate is 5%, and we depend on interest in that. Secondly, on trusteeship and fiduciary duties, it's an ongoing matter. We've indicated that between now and all of the legislative changes for retirement reform, we clearly have to sharpen this area of work. And every day you open the newspaper, you see nothing else, you see prevention. You have to ask those questions. Some of them are the direct result of supervision. Some of them also might be simply because between trusteeship, which is managed by the master of the courts, and the supervision of pension funds, there is a gap that is being exploited at the moment. We need to tighten this. The regulation and oversight of service providers for all financial services, I think that we need to watch performance against the FIPES, the Financial Advisory and Intermediary Services Act, and evaluate whether the legislation has worked, whether the quality of the service that the FIPES Act is intended to provide is actually doing is part of what the Treasury has to do. Public sector auditing and accounting, there are some good stories. PFMA is working. The Vulcan department would have closed their books within 10 days. And this will ensure that Parliament should have, if the Auditor General complies with all of the time constraints issues, Parliament should have all of the annual reports by September, allowing Parliament to exercise its role. So those issues are working. And then the oversight of the state-owned enterprises and development finance institutions, which is also an ongoing kind of task. We've accelerated the oversight of the development finance institutions, and the focal areas would be under the DBSA, the Investor Development Corporation, the National Housing Finance Corporation, the Land Bank. Well, there's a second tier which would bring some on board and pull up, but the big four would be right in on cross-tier. And then the public sector financial management, the infrastructure and local government issues, part of which come through and something we've discussed here, the infrastructure development improvement plan, a different style of budgeting for infrastructure going forward, so that we don't have money sitting around unspent and rolling over. We can deal with these issues differently. But especially in municipalities, we need to ensure that the fact is in place. Now, in particular, over the next period, the oversight of the 2010 World Cup infrastructure, both the stadiums and the other infrastructure, the Deputy Minister is on the LOC, chairs the Technical Committee, chairs the Finance Committee, and we have a specialist DDG looking at the project management issues to ensure that we can deal with both the management of contract, the timelines there, and also constantly. Secondly, we want to ensure that the road and rail infrastructure commitments made, both in the medium-term budget policy statement and in the budget, some new areas there, including the rapid bus transport system, that'll change the way in which the cities function. The money is there, and from the side of the Treasury, we have a responsibility to prioritize this in our work. The IDIP in the health sector is very important. There are these, there's been hospital revitalization plan. It is written as a traditional plan. But it was never designed to take account of all health infrastructure. The revitalization means you're taking a decrepit old building like Central Hospital, it's called Central Slumpier in And you actually invest money in upgrading the building and ensuring that you have equipment and stuff like that. When you're building an entirely new hospital, that's not revitalization in the long term. But you must ensure that national knows that its responsibility for how the provinces can't walk away from infrastructure responsibility. So the IDIP is a very important part of repairing the health infrastructure overall. Then there's the public-private partnerships. A lot of work being done. The pipeline has been somewhat constipated. Choked for a while. We need to. I mean, there have been discussions of all these years of governments trying and improve on the flow of decisions. And then the financial stability of the development finance institutions, and as I say, Chair, I don't know why we opted to do it, but the nightmare of having the financial ministers are okay, central bank governments are very difficult people, but to have the trading top ones in the world with a finance ministry here is a job that we shouldn't have volunteered for, but now we need to do. So that's what's on the cards for decision. Each of those decisions I'm happy to deal with because it's the priorities that I believe that can be responsible for setting are with the management of the institution. Turning to SARS, the first issue is for those who watch films. you know, the commissioner for these parties is chair of the World Customs Organization. Now, it means that we have to try and be amongst the best in the world. There's a big initiative post 9/11 that deals with container security, but I think that part of those issues will also want to be able to signal to our manufacturers that we need to be able to block counterfeit, we need to be able to block contraband, and part of the challenge of that is to ensure that we've got better technology. So, getting the technology in place through better electronic better scanning, again, an endeavor to have less paper, is an important challenge. Secondly, the contact centers to try and deal with customer queries is an important issue. You know, these call centers are always difficult things. I think SARS has done pretty well. SARS has also been quite innovative in its call centers. They've been able to deal with various organizations representing disabled people, and there are a number of disabled people, especially visually impaired people, working in the call center. And it's been interesting because people stay for longer and the call center tends to function exceedingly well. But we now want to shift the emphasis a bit so that there's a bit more contact, because we anticipate huge changes as a result of the changes to the norm and the habits of the filing season and that kind of thing. The last word there would say that in terms of government, there are a number of departments who coexist at border posts, at points of entry. It would be SARS, Home Affairs, SAPS, and sometimes the Defense Force. Department of Agriculture to check the phytosanitary. DTI sometimes has people to check on intellectual property and so on. And there's no fixed arrangement for this across the world. I know that this committee went to the United States. The first people you meet are the INS people. No, Homeland Security. Homeland Security. Now, in terms of the way in which this matter has been approached, a new lead responsibility in government is now falling to SARS, and that is to be the lead department at the ports of entry, so that they can look at both at all of the issues, including trade-related matters. Then to start, the community survey, 284,000 households, or 283,000. 647 or something like that household. The processing is now underway and the results will be available in November. Members would be aware of the fact that this community survey exists in view of the 5-year census. It is almost 10 times larger than the average household survey undertaken in this country, so significant. If the outcomes there are basically important, when Saturday Day comes, ask them about the sampling techniques, ask them about what information they have available by the municipality, by province, and then in terms of the base country. Secondly, the work done, we announced some time ago that there'd be work undertaken in respect of a measurement for poverty. First papers have been released jointly by SAT and Treasury. We need to undertake some pilot surveys, open the discourse a bit more, and recall that debate, general public debate, but certainly recall it so that this committee can be the first to hear what the intent would be and the approaches that would inform public divisions going forward. Last year there was an income and expenditure survey. It was an interesting survey because it was the first time that the diary method was used. Respondents were asked to keep a diary of the daily expenditure so that you could get a more accurate picture of what we expect. Interesting dynamics that would be debated now already about whether the reach of a survey like that covers all segments of life. You might be able to get a full household to respond to that. Can you get a household in hybrid itself? These questions, I'm sure, the statistics in general will be able to answer. But that survey is important because it gives us an understanding of what people are spending on. If you know that, then you can answer the last words on that page. We need to know that information so that you can have a CPI basket that is more reflective of the trends in society, because trends change. And the second last bullet is the producer price index, which will be recalibrated in at least January next year. Over the page, the labor cost survey. Now, there are two measures of employment that aren't always understood in quite this way, Shepard. The one is the quarterly employment survey, QES. The QES is the survey where the respondents are firms who advise on the number of people they employ in which categories. QES has just been revised afterwards quite recently, but the QES is dependent on the information that you have on the company, what your business register looks for, or what the registered company in CIPRO, which is the EDI entity, the Companies of Intellectual Property Rights Office. Companies, you need to know which companies are there so you can then know what's on the register of active companies, so you can then divide by sector and you can then survey. That's one part. The other part of it is a labor force survey, which is a household survey. 30,000 households, and amongst the changes we introduced with effect from this year, already piloted, would be a change in the questionnaire, the number of questions asked, change in the frequency and the change in the weighting, urban, rural, etc., etc. So, the launch of that is next year, and the first data in August next year. But the pilot that has already been undertaken is extremely important. But the launch of the new labor force survey will be during this fiscal year carried forward in the medium term. Then, our statistician generally is a very popular man there, all over the continent. His energy has been able to work toward the economic commission of Africa, the African Development Bank, and the African Union Commission, as you can see. The UN has asked statistician generally to chair the UN statistician. But the African missions are extremely important. I mean, if we don't know what the demographic trends are in each African country, we can't know how many people are leaving there and coming here, or leaving here and going there. All of that is important. And so ensuring that the UN intends the census across the world in 2010 or 1 year after each side of it, it's going to be important that they're able to deliver the census. Then the last component share would be the financial intelligence center. members of this committee who are longer serving will be familiar with the fact that there were many lengthy debates about the legislation. In essence, what the legislation does is it creates a center as a place that collects information and then advises law enforcement agencies of suspicious subjects. The Act also creates a range of accountable institutions, banks, estate agents, car sales, casinos, lawyers, accountants, they're all listed. But part of what we need to do is to revise that legislation. What we hope to bring before this committee are very substantial amendments in Financial Intelligence Center amendments later this year, hoping that we can start the full-on implementation next year for the areas that the amendments would cover are listed there. Of course, there are a series of processes involving cabinet and state law advisors before we can mail all of those issues into legislation, but that is it. By next year, we want to inspect it so that there can be more organic engagement with violators. There's this curious arrangement. Murray has tried on numerous occasions. There's an organization called the Financial Action Task Force. It has a few members. It undertakes what are called mutual evaluation reports on the country. It agrees the rules against money laundering. To get into the Financial Action Task Force, you have to belong to a regional body. We belong to a body with a curious acronym of ESAMLAG, East and Southern African Anti-Money Laundering Group. But ESAMLAG really lags a little bit. So what the bullet says is you've got to get that right, because if your neighborhood doesn't function well in this area, it applies additional pressure on the country. We want to address that. Next year we have this mutual evaluation of our own anti-money laundering measures, and these are very tough things. And because we participate in other mutual evaluations, some people may want to set up some scores, so it's going to be a problem. Then, there are some accountable institutions where we need to address these things. I think we all, Chair, would have encountered the Financial Intelligence Center Act in the bank. You would try to get $100 to get a taxi when you arrive in New York, and they would tell you you need a utilities book. The banks do that. But I don't know whether the car sales would do that. Arnold Davidson can tell us there's other Joe and Jules Smith do this to cover the banking money. I would have it not to the casinos do this too. Do the estate agents do this? Because if they aren't, then they're in violation of the law, and we need to be able to do that. Because they're accountable institutions. And then the compliance framework needs to be risk-based. Only if you're being harassed when you try and find $100 at the airport quickly, but somebody else is getting away with large amounts of money, then you're undercutting the energy directly. So we need to think of how we can maintain the interest, but just be smarter about how we go about it. And that's the work of the Financial Intelligence Center. Chair, that is the high level that I wanted to talk to this committee about. We believe that the ability of these departments or its components to address depends on the quality of the oversight, the monitoring, and the guidance from the city, which is why we decided to do this. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Very much. your perspective on tax. Question 17 and just a little bit. Let me just check whether there are any today's term, Mr. Johnson.
I just want the assessment of the needs of the church, whether it meets you, the act itself as a challenge for my glory. The reason why I'm pushing this question, there's a concern that a lot of effort is being put into the compliance, but we are missing position. But the thing. The second question is on the issue of course that the minister has alluded to was the master of the high court. I just want to find out what is taking a long term view on this matter. Why would be the relationship between the master of the high court and the SAT? Let me give you a practical example. A brand called Morodovic. And this brand forms us as this deposit. And then I cut the money to the manager of the company. And one of the banks holds value in such 2 months, where the deposit insurance 2 months is in place, in hours. But there's no regulatory measure on my activity of taking the deposit and giving it to the local asset manager. So, and a lot of, I think, information is falling in the cracks. And I'm not sure whether the master's office has got the capacity to verify financial transactions that are taking place. And that capacity is lying there at the beginning and at the first place. My last question, Chair, is on the PPR. I just want to find out the reasons I might have a question about this one for the new PPR. What are the requirements of this for the old CPI, and how is this new CPI going to improve collection and data collection and improve measurement of CPI?
Thank you. I think really refers to simple things. I really don't want to sound like technical because it's not what I intend to be. But what has been noticeable, and concentrating on the word that the minister used, accelerating and sustaining growth. And how can we do that? What are the factors, what are the criteria that have to be used? And some of them are quite good with the minister. One thing that isn't, and that is the tax rate. And I'd like the minister to actually just talk about his views with regard to the correlation, if or if it isn't, the correlation between the tax rate and investments. And I don't want to get fixated on the effect of tax rate or the trigger, because I think you're right, you can unpack that in various ways. But just the whole philosophy of tax rate, because I say this because, you know, when we look at the developing economy, and you can see a trend there. Of recent, you will see that Germany did a great debate going on. Scandinavian countries did a great debate there. France of Brown, all of a sudden in last budget, top of corporate tax rate. And then the recent financial crisis then substantially added a lot of pressure on the financial community, as because they feared London would no longer be able to compete at the center. There is a debate going on out there, and what are your thoughts about that debate? I want to see from you in that respect. The second part, and really it's kind of related to that, part of the question, what are the views of broad-based tax incentives as opposed to very specific sector or industry incentives? I know that if I look at the readings of the hospital, they have certain views, but something was different. they differ from each other. He has his book, and I would like to get some sort of view from the minister as far as that is concerned. And the third question really relates to export-related industry. We talk a great deal about the need to bring down our current deficit and the need to encourage exports. And other than getting rid of infrastructure bottlenecks, what are we doing in that regard? I mean, what specifically, from the minister's perspective, being somebody really in charge of fiscal policy, where does he see fiscal policy playing a role or not, as far as that is concerned? But in a sense, all these questions kind of tie up together.
But I've broken him down.
I think we can take the challenge for the minister about engaging with some of these developments that are taking place in the world, and I think we will understand, you know, Commission for Africa and their part and so on. I think these are really important developments that are taking place in the country and global, with a number of our treasury people participating, but we need to take advantage. The specific point I want to raise relates to the procurement policy. The good work done on the page, page 2 of the start plan of the Treasury, the Minister raises a quote. The government will continue to support the initiative to broaden representative phase of the ownership of the major production. I won't go much on the major production set, but more important to say the procurement policy that prescribes largely a price must determine whether that DE can or cannot make it. The other empowerment variables like being black and women, disabled and so on, they account for very, very minimal in the equation. My experience talking with NAPCOC and other black businesses is that this encourages further fronting, if people may call it, in those black channels. So that's because white people in this country continue to have money. It's a reality. And it's hard, therefore, if you're going to be putting so much weight on the price when you talk here at procurement policy, you are not doing this is the experience I have, what is intended as a quote there. It would be very interesting if we could hear the comments from the Minister on that. Thanks.
Thank you, Chairman. Minister, just maybe a bit more clerical information, specifically on that one key focus area of yours, that improving public financial sector management. I just want to grasp more your objectives for that, and specifically how you want to see that being done and being rolled out. Specifically, if you can refer to more centralized than the decentralized method of decision making powers and accountability as well. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank
you.
Thank you, Chair. Let me try and deal with the question. On the issue of the FIC, because, you know, these are always open questions. You know, it's the old analogy of the safety belt. you know that it's been working okay when you see somebody who hasn't been doing it. That kind of thing. So often he says that's it. I think that one of the issues is that you should feel free to discuss in a bit more detail. Because we're saying there are a few things that the FIC needs. It needs the legislation to be technical. It needs some inspection, and it needs to look at its own risk space. Now, one of the problems the FIC doesn't have is the problem of prosecution. It's a kind of referral problem. It wouldn't be unique because there have been a number of other bodies designed merely to collect or track. With the prosecutions happening further down the chain. And it's one of those areas where I think there must be in the financial intelligence center a measure of transition. Because sometimes when you close the loop, the same individuals recreate themselves as something else. Close the one thing, they recreate themselves because the prosecutions haven't had the fight in time. So there are those kinds of issues. Perhaps I leave it on the plate for the first discussion with the club. Unless Mary wants to add anything. If you want to say something, it might be something.
Yeah, I think the important thing the Minister is alluding to is that the overall system is clearly kicking into place, and we're beginning to see increasingly the results of increasing compliance, the reports that are coming through, the ability to link these various reports and link them to criminal activities. But the total supply chain is not developed as yet. And as the Minister said, there's sometimes an element of frustration because many of these investigations can take 3 to 5 years at least, and international best practice points that out. Now, we've only been going for 3 years. So to be able to see the end result yet is probably premature, but all the indications are that we're moving in the right direction. Could we be moving faster? Probably. But it's a number of different elements involving different agencies, and the FIC is a support mechanism to that process. And a lot of the emphasis remains outside the jurisdiction of the Minister ourselves and so on. So it's an integrated system which requires to be developed and needs to mature before we see the results. And again, if we look at international best practice, we're comparing ourselves to countries that have been doing it for 15 years or more, and we're saying that's the benchmark. So while we need to move as rapidly as possible in order to attain that level, we also have to understand that there's a lag, and it will take us some time. But I'd be quite happy to, on another occasion, to work through the details of this with yourselves.
Chair, on the second question, the master life of emergency. You know, it's a complicated. Partly because you've got something in the order of 7,800 registered pension funds that needs to be supervised by the FSB. What does that require? It requires a study of annual reports and investment policies and random investigation. And the ability to do that is a challenge in and of itself. Second point to make is that some of the funds are really so small and so few employees band together and construct an umbrella fund. An umbrella fund then moves out of the aegis of the FSB and is registered with the Supreme Court at the time. And what is registered in the current case is the kind of breakdown I think it was designed with good intent, but it had at least something that has, been very extensively exploited by, lots of people. Now, what we don't want to do is to sit on our hands and complain about it. So, we decided that we'll have a person internal seminar with all of the supervisors, the agencies, the master, and all of that. Look at the legislation, understand the entire architecture, understand the possibilities, try and do the detailed analysis of where the greatest risks are in what exists, and make a series of urgent and interim recommendations for it. But that is on the come. And I think depending on what arises from that, there will be further announcements that, you know, not everything is under the purview of the FSB, and that doesn't help. I mean, bank supervision sitting in the reserve bank working works pretty well, partly because you have a large organization supervising just a few institutions. It's different given the scale of non-bank financial services. The PPI, like the CPI, needs to be revalued from time to time. One is the basket and one. I think it's just like we need to reassess the sampling frame from the business deficit. There are some of these series that, I mean, you know, would just be useful to you thought that you were having the same kind of economy that you did 10 years ago. There's an explanation on page 51 of the website of that website. And they're asking that to every few years. The current one, the industry of writers, is now 12 years old. So those are let's try together the next few questions by the guys. I think the first point to make is that there's no one size fits all. Mentions the UK, the competition for what exists in the city informs certain choices. But there's more competition. I mean, if you look at some of the arguments in the United States, it's not about tax, it's about Sarbanes-Oxley. Because the fear that rather than go to New York, companies would prefer to downsize in the city of London. So there are certain issues that are profound impact in that kind of competitive environment. It would arise in other ways. You'll see who owns stock exchange and all those things that would arise in stock. There are other issues. I mean, earlier this week, the Treasurer of Australia, Australian Commonwealth, Philip Sanders, head of Eastax, and you saw Eastax there, you would see how soft we are on our records. Similarly, if you look at the conditions that Costello set for BHP Group, or for the acquisition of funds, they can make certain calls, take certain decisions because of the particular perspective, and you know, we can have a long discussion about it. It's part of the software. But it's partly a function of the wherewithal of the country to be able to apply to it. And they would apply to taxes in as much as they would apply to other issues. The key determinant, and that perhaps Andrew Donaldson is coming on this, is whether there is a level of taxation
beyond which investment or expansion is negatively affected. Well, what would be the criteria as you proceed? I think that turning to your second question on intent and strength factors, what would be broad intents? The Department of Trade and Industry are in the process of finalizing work on industrial policy framework, and clearly you take the view of industrial policy because you know that the government has to do some things to sometimes hope, sometimes just prompt some change, some behavioral change on the part of the industry. And that would also bring in the export field. The truth of the matter is, of course, that industries, all industries tend to form associations. All industry associations are just with one primary purpose, and that is to lobby government. Some are more vocal. I was looking at a particular industry which now exports large quantities of that has benefited enormously from probably the most comprehensive objective. Now holding out their hands for more. They have held a conference just this week. They'd like to more so. So, I mean, this is basically an entire discourse. I don't think the gentleman checked on any government, but you need a bit more transparency. There was an avenue for coming in.
No, so I would just one point, which is really United States macroeconomic strategy, our stance has been focused on long-run growth and development. What is appropriate to do in an economy to deal with a short-term technical problem, to deal with a business cycle issue, or perhaps deal with shifts in commodity prices, is quite different from what is appropriate to do to build sustainable capacity to continue to grow. And so creating fiscal space in our environment has been about long-run growth. And we have had to recognize in particular that we are beginning the growth expansion now against the background of more than two decades of underinvestment in infrastructure and underinvestment in social capital. So whether or not tax rates go up or down marginally over the next few years, the issues will be dealt with as part of the annual review of budget decisions that have to get taken. But a fundamental underlying objective in that consideration of and spending policy options each year is about the long run growth issues. And there's no doubt that the strengthening of tax performance and the broadening of the tax base that has been achieved over the last decade is one important element in improving the growth outlook of the economy that has been achieved.
Perhaps one of the elements that you might want to consider as part of that debate is the international comparison that we've done regularly with you as well, and that book shows that South Africa is on par or sometimes even better with OECD countries, minus countries like Iceland, which has its own exceptional way of handling corporate taxes. And the second is an argument that perhaps we haven't had, or a debate we haven't had for some time, which is the tax competition relates to the bottom debate. How far do you go in terms of competing with other jurisdictions?
Well, emerging markets. Emerging markets. That's our work.
It depends on what kind of investment you're talking about. So it might be an aluminium plant, it might not be another emerging market, it might be a development. If you're talking about a new motor car plant, it might be China. depending on which type of investment and which sector you're talking about, these new rates might be matter. But the third point is that, you know, we had the tax commission report and debates around their views on this particular matter. It showed that tax wasn't uppermost in the investor's mind, which is one of the factors. No doubt. So there are many other issues like infrastructure, skills, and so on. And I suppose that as you are agreeing, we need to constantly monitor and raise these questions so that we stay alive to changes in our environment.
This week, we signed the 60th Devil's Association Treaty. I raised that number because there are a number of jurisdictions where we have Devil's Association Treaties, but where, you know, the views on these issues may be considered different. Let me just bring between that and Honorable Hilda Johnson's first question. An interesting development. We've been invited to the ministerial of the OECD to be held in Paris next week. First, are we members of the OECD?
No.
But the Director General, Guria, has invited South Africa, India, China, Brazil, and Russia to participate in the ministerial for the first time. When I had an informal chat with him, he said, look, I'd love to be members, but I'm not going to push that yet, but I think the OECD would be the poorer for not engaging at the ministerial level with countries like those that we've invited now. And I think it's clearly something being taken up by all the countries that personally affected, because that should be China, but we will participate in that committee. It's one of the changes in the guidance. We need to kind of take a map of the world, sketch all of these things, and just look at what the engagements are like. The issues of procurement policy are interesting. Chair, I'm looking around the room and I don't know. Maybe yourself and maybe Honorable Moroto and Honorable Nguyen were members of this committee when we debated the preferential procurement policy framework. You were wrong about the answer to you. Now, let me explain. Because the split in procurement was agreed to in this committee between value for money and other considerations. It wasn't a thumbs up by the Minister of Finance. It was actually something that served before this committee. It's embedded in the legislation, and therefore, when it's amended, it would have to be amended by this committee. Because that's what the Constitution was. The Constitution said that procurement must be fair and equitable, but that does not prevent the government from taking such measures to provide preference to historically disadvantaged schools. I don't have a copy of the Constitution, but you'll find it there under. The legislation then was designed to deal with that issue. Later, when we adopted the PFMA in 1999, so it was negotiated in 1998, adopted in 1999, Act 1 of 1999, the value for money concept came to very soon. I think that we should give ourselves the responsibility to discuss that matter. How do you draw the line? Where do you draw the line? When is the capitalist no longer capital? When are the norms of accumulation different? What advances in the handout and what is just seeking to accumulate through the means of state efficiency? I think we must have both a philosophical but a very practical discussion. It's a necessary discussion, Chair, because you see, when you look at the codes in the and the appendix of the DEE Act, the codes, I think, appear more to vary the norms that this committee agreed to in this room on the Preferential Procurement Act than they deal with the DEE Act in and of itself. But that's an assessment that that member should undertake individually and collectively. Yeah. But one of the agreements that we have is that we would align the two pieces of legislation. So all that I'd like to do at this stage is to ask the committee to set a day for that discussion. I hope I got the last question back. What exactly do we mean by public sector management, financial management? Okay. One of the many decisions. And it's quite central to the pandemic is that if you want managers to manage, and the managers referred to are people like the acting issue, the status in general, the commissioner, the head of the advice, it's to look at that level. If you want them to manage, then we need to give them then we need to give them some control over the resources that they need to manage. That put in train a number of decisions because it was also drawn from the Public Service Act where you weren't going to employ citizens. So that if the statistician general wants a cut around and a strong staff essay, he needs to be able to recruit the correct people. You don't need another agency to try and do this for. Don't trust his judgment on it. In these cases, you don't trust his judgment either on the minister or, more importantly, you don't trust the council. Same doesn't apply elsewhere. But that's quite an important principle. The second thing that we did was to look at issues such as procurement. We used to have a much feared body called the State Tender Board. The State Tender Board would sit and take decisions of all kinds. On the one hand, the rules were very clear. So generally, there was a fixed day of the week when tenders were there. They were required in the presence of the press to demonstrate how they were opening and to read the names of the bidders and so on. There were those kinds of things. And then they would make announcements about these things at the same time. The question that arose is whether managers don't need to manage that. And so we took away the state tender board and we put in place set of rules for procurement, allowing management in departments to take decisions. Certainly, except for a few items that should be dealt with. If you deal with the people there, and you deal with the procurement of goods and services, that kind of takes up the bulk of the budget. There's a third area that we dealt with differently, and that was in engagement by the Department of Public Works, which was quite central. They were the landlords. They negotiated with the owner of the building, and they were the landlords, and they failed to negotiate. We didn't actually know what to make the square. And generally, the service from big owners of office buildings in Victoria, for instance, is quite visible. We were one landowner. Now we've shifted to an approach where every department has to provide the cash on the budget. It doesn't take the department from the work of that. Now, there are certain things you might need to negotiate centrally. So the fact is that you don't necessarily have any partners. But you kind of weakened this now. I'm sorry that your colleague, Dr. Fandane is not here. Because we crash about this issue all the time.
And also,
he's very helpful. No, but no, he's not. He may have a sort of family, not Dr. There are other issues where, in management terms, against that backdrop that I've sketched, where there's actually a better quality of reporting. We have, in terms of Section 32, actual monthly expenditures from the department. Yeah, we get into something that is so busy on the integrated financial management system. But on the system that exists, we have an early warning application called Bullying Data. We can see into this on a monthly basis and publish the action expenses. No question. The idea is that even where you loosen some of the income sources, it may be quite arbitrary, or may have been arbitrary, by requiring that you can confirm actual monthly expenditures, you can confirm trend lines, and the endeavor has been changed. There was certainly when we dropped the fee of the name, still is there the open trade that one day it will happen like this, that Parliament can oversee what actually happens. So next week, these departments come and they report and they go into the detail, we can go down to a few levels below where we are today. And so you can confirm that this is a work program of statistical evidence. And when, in the second reading debate, you vote, you look at the work program, you look at chapter 12 of the estimate of national expenditure, you say, okay, I have a comfort that they will do this. It's a third part of the oversight responsibility. But then, by the end of June, 3 months will have elapsed, you can then say, well, a quarter of the fiscal year has elapsed, are they on trend to deliver? What does chapter 32 report say, because it's actually published? They're lagging in the following areas. It gives a strength and an oversight responsibility to Parliament that previously would not have been there. Of course, I've said in this committee, I've said in other committees, I'm the track record. I'm the track record. Don't worry about that. I'm the track record. Parliament doesn't use the track record. It exists. It's a no-brainer. It's a necessity. So, this is broadly the approach we want to take. And so what the Treasury does not do is to maintain a short leash of the departments. There's more kind of managerial philosophy that undergirds what we're trying to do, but know that we've established the oversight responsibility in elected office.
I have the next one, Mr. Okay. And
Thank you, Chair. Chair, I think partially the minister has responded to this issue, but nonetheless, I'll raise my question. My question is around the TSMA, and in terms of the accounting and policy, precisely because TSMA is a piece of value for money. My question is, in the minister's view, do we get value for money? And when you look in terms of policy, how many of departments which get disclaimers of opinions from the office of the auditor general? And what are the minister's view on that part? And in some other provinces, including the province I'm from, but I know that I'm not representing the LCOC here, but the one in terms of the national and then the member of the finance committee, I think has interest in terms of what is happening in other provinces. Whereby I have some engagement in terms of some other entities, how do they spend and overspend, and what do they have which they actually in terms of their own fiscal, which is not going to cover, but they have overpaid for. And what do we do in that respect? And the issue, I think, which is a debate, and a view which I want to also solicit from the minister, the issue of the supply chain management in the CSMA. How far are we in terms of the policy level, in terms of trying to come up with the supply chain management in the CSMA? I think that perhaps will also assist what is happening. The last question is that why do we carry this role of this thing of the oversight of the trade and gen welcome, people welcome in terms of funding? Are we really sure that the figures and the amount which we have given the contractor the figures and the additional one, will they not come back again and begin to say that we need more because of 1, 2, 3? Because they did have all the money, they came back and said we need more because of 1, 2, and created the precedent to give them more. My question is, will they not come back again? Are we sure that they will, if they will come back, given the money we have given them, if our economy has a good shock to absorb what we have given them, and if they come back, are we going to have recreated that kind of a total problem? Thank you.
When you read the book of the Finger Test Work by Professor Vincent Owens, he identifies the finance as the major obstacle to development in India. And also the way the financial trade, professional trade is working in India. In the result that the accession trade, called accession trade, which are the principles and values which are different from the commercial banks. And it could lend to the foreign sector in India, because that was much more significant. It is time that we have taken it from the way the banks operate or copy some of the good things that they're operating and try to, or in an effort to try to preach about this present economy and seeing that the most of the people as in South Africa are more or less in the same situation as explaining the book. in India. No, in the subset of the G5, as we know, the selective you look at the respect of the G5, the interest kind of also treated. And it was one of the issues that were raised by Professor is to the end of poverty. It's also the institution, but at the table of institutions, whether they share some of the views or the philosophy view in developing the economy of the country. So we have had the problem in South Africa. Or are our CEOs that are in the GFI share the same vision as you of development and the education? My question today is on the on service issue. Seller, the food, the end of poverty. Professor Sex pointed out to the sector of the geopolitical nature of countries. That especially geography also plays a role in spreading the content. Now, taking credit, it's South Africa, Mozambique, and first Namibia that are closer to the coast of which. Or that they have access to transport by water. Or we should buy from there by air or roads or inland transport. Now, while investing a lot of money invested in the infrastructure, or green operations in the economics, the advocate name. You know, but you said that the traditional road is much cheaper than compared to rail. And you are investing more in rail than in roads.
Which
economy is there? I forgot the economy is the certain economy that we do, but that's actually the spin-offs from roads are much better compared to rail. Now, rail is cheaper, but it's very expensive to change. Now, taking inside the business perspective and our mission to serve a free trade zone inside, how are we going to deal with these issues of transport and infrastructure development, seeing that the private sector is only 15% of the infrastructure? And the incentives are actually what you want to try to fix it. Because when you are in the thinking, they can say that on the issue of taking laws, all the incentives that are there on the subject, the treasury should be informed that only 20% of the infrastructure investment that is. Now, having taken this into consideration, are we on the winning of it or and that's why we want to be having an interest in having a new currency inside in the years and years to come. Is there a measure or any currency that we are going to gain or that is going to act as a base when we move towards what they think I see.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, I think firstly we must compliment the Minister for bringing his finance idea. I think we have been arguing strongly for a demonstration of accountability, etc., and the fact that the finance family this year sent a very strong signal to
to the outside and show freedom to people also. The family is indeed everybody needs to be respected and put also in the concern. And that is, I think, from my own view, that it's pretty difficult to follow. And there are two that came up with a big message to the history of all the social network. And as such, it can only serve the alcohol of the sexual. Point also further helps me to make a comment and I refer to the TFMA, which says it is assumed that we should get the department is responsible for policy measures and outcomes. Often we find that we have federal departments, generally speaking, committing often policy measures, and often that is causing a conversation between political heads and the legislators, and it can create the best governance and practices. I think if you can have this sort of a demonstration, generally now, you can only put it if you could go to get the political governance. So in terms of the output and outcomes, I believe that henceforth you'll be able to engage meaningfully with the minister and his team, because I think you'll be seeing from the stage in both our open plans to engage all the time. So thank you for that. I think we accept it to the minister's part of the case and we do appreciate that. The second point I wish to make, Chef, is that in terms of our aims and objectives that outlined in the 2018 Cultural Department, it was suggested that the aim is to advance economic growth and income redistribution, to be a strong and sustainable national budget and to distribution of resources, try to improve the efficiency raise fiscal revenue while enhancing efficiency and competitiveness of the economy, sound management of government financial assets and liabilities, promote transparency and enforce effective financial management. I think in all these departments, all these years, we made significant strides. I think the department that the Minister of Human Rights had complimented. But as the CSNB clearly said, that on performance-driven systems based on measurable outputs, it's very, very difficult to measure exactly how you have advanced. Although we can sense it, we can see it. I would like to manage to comment on basically, if you are saying that we have got the finances of our country under control, how this Health Treasury is setting the example for all the other departments, saying that the relationship between your objectives and your goals and how you have made it, and also how, for example, quality alleviation was considered for many years now as a challenge. Directly or indirectly, how your team finance has effectively adjusted, because often when the president makes certain comments, he says that that is going to die in terms of this serious mission bill. In terms of the set plan, how do we now monitor that those issues that will be something which needs to be really innovative?
Thank you. Mr. Logan. Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I just want to say a personal note to the Minister on the oversight of the issue of special attention, the attention like this, the management division, on the operations of stakeholders sometimes. I don't want to find out whether your activities are in any way improving the financial performance of operational efficiency of SOE, and what are the challenges and what are the areas that need to be improved. I'm raising this in the light of the past experience where you find that we have to go through management of the air, for example, continuously, and this is quite a lot of money. So, what's our long-term view of some of the stakeholders and what it's not time, I'm not sure if that might be a statistic solution. It's not the time that some of the undergoing SOE should just be sold instead of being a drain on the system.
You know, if I can know how many questions I have, I would have reduced the number of questions. I'm sitting now with Mr. David Sergi and Mr. Manuel. I don't know whether I should take on, and this is up to take all three now, and we respond to all the questions. Is that okay?
Okay. So just two brief questions. One, concerning social security and accounts forms. When you were asked how the kids were working COVID, how far are we down that road? And particularly, to what extent have there been consensus reached with the role players, the stakeholders in that industry, particularly in the private sector, as to the management spot, administration concerns, and of assets? In that respect. And just finally, just when, building on a previous question, the latest debate which one seems beginning to emerge between the United States and Africa, and the whole question of some opponents, like that we are indicating that the way the United States and the project, what you've got, and retiring the single currency for change. What is your department's convergence criteria for a single currency?
I want to the minister to check us through the projects, basically projects consolidate. I know that is the function largely of the local government. But again, they have another intervention to address the skills shortage of the demand for the project in the end. But the skill here is disturbing new in our local government structure. They, in their defense, they will always point out of the shortage of skills. From the existing aside through the Office of the President for a book, if the minister can get us into confidence, if the process is working, is functioning well, is the virus, but the link to that one bullet point on page 5. If this intervention would also be extended to not just more especially provincial financial institutions, the development and the provinces in particular, because there again you have this problem where the issue of KEE, for instance, is not being addressed, because, I mean, basically, the issue here with land business, in particular, we're not affected the planet. There are other issues of scale, of policy, but the issue of access to finance is an impediment to the overall or economic development
and we know that there's further funding
with regards to that, and I think that is of serious interest to me. Just hear your ideas and your principles and objectives of that as well. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Chair, the issues again will be raised related to Yunus, Muhammad Yunus in Bangladesh, in the Grameen Bank. Two interesting stories. The first is that microfinance, microcredit like that tends to deal with both access. And access in Bangladesh is more important than price. It's a very interesting, it's been incredibly empowering and so on, but access is more important than price. And it would be interesting to test the things in school literacy in an environment where you've got, where you can't extort and where with effect from a few weeks, and the National Credit Act will also find effect, where you do these practices, can't find residence. I mean, it's going to be a very interesting exercise to explore that. But the other issue, and ties into your second question, you know, Mrs. Daniel and Becky has been involved with the Women's Development Bank for a number of years, and they work in areas like Bushbuck. One of the big problems they've got is securing the necessary skilled individuals to work in the institution. Because people command, the private sector command such outlandish salaries that they wouldn't find residence with the urban finance institution. So I wish that she could come to a seminar for interested parliamentarians just about their experiences with the urban finance, both here and internationally. Because she's observed this matter close-handed in Bangladesh, Grameen, and others, in Chile, in Turkey, and so on. And perhaps I don't have the powers to invite to the first lady, but perhaps it can be taken up, because I think there's a wealth of information that we need to share. On the issue of the institution, I don't know.
Are you walking the way? Are you ready for me?
No, we'll come back to the issue of geography in a moment. Let me come back to the convergence criteria as well. You know, thank you for your kind words on the bus.
Actually, I missed you. Sorry.
You know, I think the powers of standing business and public accounts stress the Parliament. The Parliament has free rein, the TFM gives Parliament's rein, including the recommendation to institute criminal procedures. If the power that vests is with Parliament, and it's a very important power that should be understood in context. I know of one instance where Parliament was actually very strident, and that was in the book. And clearly, you know, where there are gross and repeated violations, then I think Parliament needs to be heard. Because it's the Parliament that Department of Accounts, and this was my answer to the Honourable Murray, it's there, and we've got to ensure that happens. On the 2010 issue, you know, we didn't make any reports and updates, and I think Andrew Longton might be in a better position than I am. We learned a hard bargain. If you look at the Johannesburg Stadium, for example, the city said, look, if we take out the bells and whistles that you say we don't need, and we look at the stadium, the size of all the people, we can fit it in to to the money and to that side. Now the city wants to put back some of those, but it has to be for their company. There's another city that's on the main menu that wants a very expensive kind of structure. It has to be for their company. I mean, we have to draw the line somewhere, and I want to give this house the assurance that the Deputy Minister, General Mulcahy, is chair of that committee, is actually in presence. And we will ensure that the public finance and special deputy DG appointed to the city project, we will hold pretty tight rein. The other issue that we are, and one that we watch carefully, is the import content of any particular study. Because that drives up the cost and also impacts the balance, but we'll watch those things together. Try and distinguish where something ought to be locally available. From areas where there's a supply constraint like with cement and trying to get balance supply. People are watching all of that in the Treasury, and I dare say the report that I see from what they do inspires me, because it says that people are doing what is necessary. So it places me in a position where I can raise the problem.
I was hoping that we could tell a story about the office site. Not for the first time today, technology is important. Let me, hopefully, you can let me deal with and we want to come in on the experience.
I just wanted to make one quick point on the stadium, which is, as the Minister indicated, is the question of the question was, will they come ask for more? For us, the question is, under what limited circumstances might they be considered? On the stadium, I don't think that it causes serious concern. They're big projects, they're probably watched closely, they're hard work, and already we're seeing encouraging signs that they're keeping the deadlines are being met, and I don't have serious concerns there. On the transport related project, in a sense, the question is a different one, because we might perceive greater progress there, and I think the risk on the transport side is not whether they'll come and ask for more. But whether we'll succeed in getting those projects going faster. And really, from a treasury and budget point of view, we might receive a request coming in with plans attached to them to make sure that we get those underway. So I would suggest that, particularly on the transport side, keeping a close watch and monitoring progress might be something that could easily be on the day.
What is the system? There's something called the urban transport something. There's a kind of conditional grant system where we're not giving money to cities without plans. There's a bit of a running on the issue. But we want to see the plans, because if they can't plan, they're not going to get the infrastructure on time and on budget. And so, you know, it's being able to help them through those kinds of issues. On the measurable outputs, I mean, it's very difficult. There's something to me. If your plant is built by stadiums, you can see by what data you build the stadium. That output is very, very easy to measure. On some of the issues, especially the administrative issues, it's a lot harder. One of the issues we can watch the screen while I talk, and we'll come back to the obvious in a moment. Huh? We might need the light a little bit down so we can see the screen. Because all the data is available. On the poverty alleviation issue, I think it's very much worth it. We can make the change, and we can see what has happened with social security and the number of beneficiaries. But we know that that's not the totality of the outcome. Hence, the poverty alleviation, or the poverty measure, was Because sometimes we shoot ourselves, you know, I sit in a meeting with people who say, but the unemployment rate should be 50%, and say, why? Here's a measure. And they say, well, we don't like the measure. Why? Because you need to include discouraged workers. Why? And you must include people who say that they're unemployed. Why? When there's an international definition, and with policies like that, a really crack position, and they have a very clear set of definitions and measures, we're not going to do that. Well, it's better than better. Okay.
You hear
a distance. Yeah? Those are
better
than better than what? I'm wrong. Can you, as a chairperson, speak to our indigenous cousin about this? No, there's a very important reason, you know. Because we all need to work together. It's a bit difficult to kind of step out of line and take responsibility and so on. But we hear you. But can you talk to other communities about this as well? I'm the church reform. I'm the social security reform. Perhaps I can ask Andrew to just deal with that.
Well, the question is our progress being made towards reaching consensus on the wide number of issues that are involved in the detailed design. There's work going on in Treasury. We're in fact having a workshop with other departments next week, in which we're going to be looking at some of the policy questions, some of the design questions, with a view to reaching agreements on the next phase of work. And the next phase of consultations, which of course is to take consultations into a task team that has been formed by the Committee of Medbank and beyond that into discussions with the association and other stakeholders. Those consultations will maybe happen in the second half of the year, but we hope to at least have some preliminary discussions before mid-year. So the answer is no. There's not a huge amount to report on details. The consultations were scheduled for the second half of the year, but yes, the Ministry of Environment Committee is in place. It's held several meetings. It's got a workshop coming up, and in due course, the committee will no doubt want to learn more about that. And obviously, it's just put in place in appropriate dates for that.
There are some issues that I would imagine are not going to be easy to construct consensus on. I mean, people have a particular way of life to make money by doing particular things. There's going to be a measure of resistance to trying to do things where you might benefit from economies of scale differently. I anticipate that some of those things will be easy. But let's come back to geography and roads and rail. I think we have a better perspective now on the
food. Well, then that could be the railway now.
If anybody would like to make any other claims, let's just, yeah. I think we've got other stories in the computer. clearly, the geography issue is important. But I truly believe that there's a case we made for efficient rail. But I don't know in what circumstances this is worth arguing by transport economists, but you know, if you look at the fact that from Ermelo to Richards Bay, every day, I don't know how many coal trains leave, and they're 2.4 kilometers long. Put the same coal on the road and tell me about efficiency.
Or oil pipelines.
Or take the Shishin Sultana railway line. Tell me about efficiency. No, I don't think that that argument actually works. You can take the road from Kampala in Uganda. There's a road that goes through to Mombasa. It's the link that Kampala has with the sea. To get from Kampala to Jinja, which is the source of the Nile, 65 kilometers away, takes you about 2.5 hours. Can't run efficient comments like that. So we have to look at this argument quite differently. We don't have the rivers, and fairly small. The Congo River is navigable for quite a distance. Angola has a sea, Tanzania has a sea, Madagascar, I think, has a sea, Mauritius, I think, has a sea. So there are a few southern countries that at least have a bit of water. But, I mean, it's a difference in, I think, the discussion that can take us quite a time. But what we have to deal with is the fact that if you took Southern Africa and you looked at the links, there are largely colonial links. So you go to the Congo Belt in Zambia, you build a railway line to the coast, you take out the copper, you take, put it on a tray, send that railway line, away it goes. Processing happens elsewhere. All of our infrastructure is like that, and the key challenge is in front of and almost precedes the questions about convergence, and that is to boost the intra-Sahelic and the intra-African trade, and so the infrastructure needs to support that. You must get good story between borders, facilitate the flow of goods, as the Commissioner would say, we need to facilitate trade. And infrastructure is a very important part of that, including road, including rail, and there needs to be a variety of modes. That are selected for that purpose. We have to change the geography to maximally suit our interests. And you know, we can unlock a lot of agricultural potential by building roads where we can get fertilizers in and goods to market. All of those are going to be important. It sounds like a terrible thing to say, Honorable Gary, but I answered this scholar the other day, and I was spared the hardship of watching the semi-final match against Australia because in the Cricket World Cup it was actually being talked about. So, you know, at least I didn't die of heart failure or something like that. And the issues of capacity of local governments were raised in a very good shot. See, I think that we must require of all institutions of government to find the most competent people. And I don't think that there's a contradiction between employment equity and finding the competent. Employment equity does not mean you don't employ white people. Employment equity clearly in a municipality does not mean you take a traffic officer and convert him into your finance manager. But Mr. Batman, that's what I said to Sosa. And you know, what I also said there is that I'm very happy to employ competent people who I know are far more competent and know a hell of a lot more than what I do because it constructs an engagement where you can get the best out of the profession. I don't know why we don't kind of try this program. We don't have to have a constitution. And here the magic can help. Where we don't have the skills necessary right now, I think we must design a mentorship program. But you can't just pretend that, you know, the skills are not there, so it doesn't matter who you put there in any case. So the issue of local government has been surveyed, the Minister of Public Service Administration actually has a very good overview of where the skills are, where there are no useful managers in place, what the skills and experience base of useful managers, of useful finance officers, etc., etc., are we. They have an idea which is supposed to have engineers or technicians, which don't, how many there are, what the distribution is, and it's work in progress. You know, programs like here in the moment can help, but I think we must ensure that the people do the correct thing in the way in which they go about functions. And that, I think, is a message that all of us in Parliament should give consistently. On the provincial financial institutions, there aren't as many. I'm looking at just to show you the time in every life where he was involved in trying to solve the problem. Development finance and corporation. And it was a hard job to try to solve that problem. But I don't think there are that many. And I don't know that we have a remarkable track record of success. But the key at the end of the easy to the you see the Itala? Yes, Itala we have to get to because it operates under special banking management. We need to get there. But you know, we're trying to focus on the big ones. We see that one of the four I mentioned gets its name in the papers. On the issues of local government, you know, I think the first point, and you know, I'm going to lean on the commission, not because of that issue, but these are 283 instances of government. There are certain powers and functions in the piece of legislation. Is it before this
meeting? Yes,
have you concluded?
We're just having that.
No, I think we need to, I'm happy if we can follow the time to have a full discussion of this in that context because it's very important. There are various other aspects that this committee has that tasked us on in respect of national finances, including the budget of the 30th of May 2005, which deals with who is excluded from procurement. That deals with somebody asked about supply chain And in that belief, we get the president to say that in the state of the nation, there's no need for better discipline. And then we do the work and we communicate this to the provinces, but the provinces might not budget for that. And they say, well, this is how the constitution gives us an equitable share. We've allocated the equitable share. We appropriate in our legislatures. We have different priorities to what they're sharing with national. So there's no money for school building programs. We have a constitution. We clearly have a constitution. Now, I think if you take this matter to the average state, to local government, there's a constitution there arising in that place. Which is why we've got to test and evaluate the norms that we require to talk to them, ask if they take as far as that, ask what the, I mean, we've got 11 years of learning in respect to this constitution now. We owe it to ourselves to engage with these issues. I think it's very I don't think we do ourselves a great service as an executive. Commissioner, you want to comment on anything?
I'm not sure exactly what it's at the end of the night, but he's saying this because when Parliament is involved in creating the policy framework for the health of the government. And I think we were still right in having chapter 7 as it is, and conceptualizing as Parliament has been the three spheres of government. But it might well be appropriate to sit back 8 years later and reflect upon what the experience actually is, and adopt whatever flexibility is required in order to make that sphere a lot more effective. My own view would be that local government, and even something like that, requires a lot more central financing. It's actually the size of the area that really occurs, and that it needs a lot more attention, and some of it is getting there now, in order to give it the capacity to meet what are very immediate local needs. And perhaps the second area that you yourself should look at is where's the convergence between various programs that you approve? Because every program that has a deliverable has that deliverable taking place in a locality. And what level of coordination and management and saving is there, which ensures that you get the school class before the schools, the school before the houses, and the clinics in time for the population to service it, and so on and so on. Some of those things I imagine are happening, and you're in a better position to say, and some of it we could do better than we're currently doing. There's clearly a capacity issue. Rationalizing what we have done, 600 municipalities to 800 municipalities prior to the rationalization to 284 or something like that.
Yeah, 283.
283.
And this is coming from where?
Is the right decision. I don't want to get involved in politics. But the other area which perhaps we could give thought to and others as well is the use of the district municipalities, where the intention was that it would be a source of mutual assistance, empowerment of the locality, sharing of resources, a kind of shared service of center, if you like. And again, I'm not in touch now, but it'll be useful to see whether that vision is materializing in that kind of way or not. But more could certainly be done through a shared services concept where each municipality can't actually have its own individual capacity at that particular point in time.
Andy says I'm going to be in trouble with Honourable Lucia again, because there's another question that Lisa hasn't answered. So she said, I should answer his question. And that is the question about value for money. So will we say thank you to Lucia?
Thanks. I have no time to be in
it's a very difficult question because I don't think there's a uniform answer. If you ask me about areas that I know better, I think I'm really in a position. There are areas that are actually a bit difficult. I mean, you know, I know that if I was by this tumbler, and you say to me, I've got to find this tumbler for 82 cents, then I'll probably be able to find that tumbler. If I then come and say, I paid freelance for it, then you know you're not going to have any money. So there are particular areas. So I've seen some of the audit reports that are actually scary in procurement. I won't even tell you which part of the country it is. It's scary because people do things. But in the procurement of goods, I think it's really easy to ascertain, and the audit function is capable of picking up this. What the audit does is to say value for money, and then between yourself and the Honourable Johnson, the question if you can buy a product for R1, but you have to pay R1.20 because the supplier is black, if that value for money, what is the answer? But I'm saying when we deal with this issue, we need that kind of discussion. Without prejudice, I think we all know. In the acquisition of services, I think that there are many things going on. There are some functions that ought to be done in government that are then given out to consultants. Now, you can take the view that the consultancy was outgrown and charged a little bit too much, and that gives you one perspective, or you can take a different view and ask about the capacity of that particular instance of government to undertake the service, and they didn't do it when they brought it. So, I think that it's a difficult question to answer. You almost have to take a sample as the auditor would and go through that. And then we are able to say, in 8 of the 10 instances in the sample, it was okay, but that means 80% because you can never be quite as obvious in every audience of the process, you won't be able to do. But you can then focus all of your attention on the 2 instances. Because the late Pete Trevings said, you must focus on those 2 because don't praise the fish for swimming. He knows it must swim. The diet stops swimming. So focus when it stops swimming. So focus on the 2 issues. So that's the way in which you approach it. But it's a very open-ended question and a very difficult question. And I think that through what we offer in the Section 32 and Section 40 reports to Parliament and provincial legislatures, and through what we have in the orders of departments undertaken by the Auditor General, and through what we also have as part of the ability to call for forensic orders to endow things, there is actually immense power, but power given to the legislatures as part of the oversight to ensure that those of us in administration are kept in a state of merit. But I'm not trying to stop the question and say it's a necessary question to answer. Because you may find that, there's too much outflow, and you can't deal with the questions that the government will come to you demand or something. If you want to deal with poverty, and you want to tie this up with Christmas, you want as correct an answer as possible, because you need the resource in hand to be able to deliver on the policy. And if the resource has been spoiled by people doing wrong things, then you weaken your policy ability, and that I think is issue. Now, I haven't dealt with the convergence issue. So that would be a long discussion. But, there's been a series of macroeconomic convergence criteria which are published. And they'd be about aligning inflation, deficits, seeing interest rates as an outcome, trying to maximize interchangeability and exchange rate so that currency convertibility is there. All of those things that before you can even talk about a single currency. And a single currency, I don't think you're going to get there by fiat. There has to be a convergence path, and you have the political responsibility to put into line those who are diverging from that path. And that's what we need. And I think it's going to be, you can't have that long. There are another discussion of financial parliament about the United States of Africa and so on. I know that it's a task given to the heads of state for the next summit, but you need an organic route from 53 quite diverse economies to a different place, and that's what we need.
Okay.
Okay.
Thank you very much. That lays the foundation for our engagement with
We hope you enjoyed the movie
tonight. You obviously anticipate the
you have a student with you. Thank you. We'll wait for 10 minutes and then we'll come back and let you see yourself and proceed with whatever it is. Thank you very
that you can see a little bit. can see that.
But then you can then more you can
oh, then they're going to be short there.
You don't have to have any further.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
Because you want to shop in the
same
way.
Okay.
Thank you.